before we allow you to talk to us, to make a presentation, which way you're going to interrogate after you've made the presentation, probably you should know who are the members of parliament that are here. This is the portfolio committee for health, and these are the members that belong to that portfolio committee. I'll allow them to tell you who they are, though you might forget their names at the end, but it doesn't matter. Let me start with the free press. Mama. Those are the members of the portfolio committee. Is it not possible that we can sit to our side so that we can see each other? Sometimes it's good. I'm asking for my Emma to come this side so that she, sometimes it's good to see the movement, the facial movements when people are talking. And you can understand. If you could come this side, then Daddy Hannah would come this side so that you can see. I'm not trying to say FFC is an opposition party.
I must sit between them and mine.
And I think it's deal with those.
there's quite a lot of work that we have done. I must also say that in terms of our relationship with the Department of Health, at some point it went down, but in the past 2 years, we have actually resuscitated that relationship to such an extent that it is a very close relationship. In fact, our research director is part of the ministerial advisory team on health information and data. That actually says to me that we are getting closer and closer to working together with the department. In most cases, what has been happening is that we have been making all sorts of recommendations, and that relates to different sector departments. But our interaction in Parliament has primarily been limited to interaction with the Finance Committee. So it's been very difficult to be able to ascertain when we receive the Minister of Finance response on behalf of government in terms of the recommendations. We can see that no government agrees with this or government agrees with that. Then to actually ascertain whether the health sector actually, for example, agrees with the kind of issues that we have identified and the approach to dealing with them, it's never been really ascertained, because there's a Ministry of Finance, National Treasury that coordinates that process, and we don't really get to share that. But I must say that in the past 2 years, we've been able to engage quite robustly with the Department of Health, and I think that augurs very well for the future, because in that kind of a process, then we are also able to pick up the issues that specifically we must look at in terms of what the challenges are that the department faces. And I think this process now that we have started with this committee will also assist us in shaping our own research agenda and bringing on board those issues that are of concern to the committee. By the way, the Financial and Fiscal Commission reports to Parliament. So the recommendations that we make, any recommendations that we make, are actually recommendations made to Parliament. And as such, when we have to deal with the executive around those recommendations, we as the Commission have no power to actually question the Minister when he says, I don't accept this recommendation or I accept it, and how then it's actually going to be implemented. But Parliament is the one that has that power, and I think it's a very useful exercise for us to actually be able to brief the relevant department on some of the recommendations that we make. So, Chairperson, with those few words, let me just introduce this process that we want to follow today. I think, like I said, the Financial and Fiscal Commission is an institution that is established in terms of the Constitution, Section 220 in particular, to make recommendations on the equitable division of nationally raised revenue and on any other financial and fiscal matters. In general, the any other financial and fiscal matters, we have interpreted it to refer to those kinds of financial and fiscal matters that have got an intergovernmental dimension that's affecting the three spheres of government in one way or another. Now, what guides the work of the Commission is primarily the Constitution, and in particular the provisions of Section 214 of the Constitution, and we also balance those provisions against the Bill of Rights, in particular emphasizing the progressive realization aspect of the rights of South African people to access services. We submit our recommendation 10 months prior to the tabling of the Division of Revenue Bill, which means for 2012, Division of Revenue recommendations were submitted in May. And at this point in time, we are having discussions with the National Treasury and government in general on how those recommendations have been factored into the budget process. And we have, at the moment, we are actually sitting with the first draft response from government around those recommendations. But we'll deal with that when we deal with the Division of Revenue Bill in February. But so for today, basically, what we're going to do is we basically going to take you through the recommendations, but also paying specific attention to the request that the committee asked us to do. I think Teboho spent some time talking to the committee sector to try to get the exact specificities of the issues that the committee wanted us to focus on, and he managed to clarify some of those issues. But let me say that in terms of the submission for the Division of Revenue 2012, one of the key driving factors that we have put on the table is that the fiscal consolidation that government is currently undertaking, which basically is a very nice way of saying we've got a very tight fiscal framework. There is very little new money that's coming into the system. Is actually supported by the Commission, and the counter-cyclical approach that government has taken is also supported by the Commission. But in implementing that fiscal consolidation, one of the key recommendations that we made back in 2009, when the impact of the recession began to be felt in South Africa, was that we should be very careful not to disturb the resources that we have allocating and have been allocating to cushion the poor and the vulnerable from the impact of the recession. Now, in terms of our projections, we projected that the economy was most likely to recover only around about 2015 if the impact is severe and if there was going to be a double-dip recession. When the double-dip recession, we were talking about a recession had come and gone, but there were still some countries that were most likely to go into recession after the United States and the islands of this world. There were still some countries that were looking vulnerable. And the growth projections that we had at that particular point basically reflected that the economy was only going to recover around about 2015. And what we are seeing at this point in time is that the Eurozone countries or economies are actually facing that possibility of another recession. And unfortunately, those are the countries that we as South Africa trade the most with. I think about 40%, or just over 40% of our trade actually goes to those countries. If those countries collapse, it basically means that our economy will be heavily impacted. And unfortunately, unlike in 2008, where we were coming from a situation where the economy was running surpluses, we are no longer in a surplus position, we are actually in a deficit position. And that basically means that if those economies collapse, our future prospects will actually be worse. That then calls for a very careful decision-making process on what sort of programs we want to invest in, and preferably we want to invest in programs because we're borrowing money right now. If you're running a deficit, it means you're actually borrowing money. You're consuming what you don't have. So we then have to make proper choices, especially about the future generations. And the choices that we have are quite limited because on the revenue side, the prospects are not looking very good in terms of the recovery. So the choices that have to be made are ones that benefit the current generation, especially protecting the poor and the vulnerable from the global economic crisis, and also investing to create create jobs, which is a very powerful priority of government as we speak now. Now, unfortunately, we're also embarking on very massive social reform, social assistance reform programs like the NHI and the social security for all age people. We engage in all of those. And those are the choices that we will have to be making there in terms of how we actually fund those going forward. But the Commission basically supports the direction that government has taken, and also the fact that most of these programs are being phased in. It's not like a big bang approach, also makes a lot of sense. So the Commission supports all of those issues. Now, with those few words, Chairperson, I'm going to hand over to Dewo for to actually take you through the contents of the presentation.
The focus of the presentation is on the department strategic plans and achievements, the expenditure outcomes, as well as the Office of the Auditor General's opinion on the department's performance in 2010-11 financial year. And then I'll move over to the recommendations made by the Financial Inquisitor Commission on health policy issues. Then this slide shows the targets and achievements of the department's strategic objectives for 2010-11. We have selected some of the targets in the annual report. And the first one that shows the implementation of HIV AIDS counseling and testing campaign. And the department shows that over 11.4 million South Africans have been counseled, and over 9.7 million agreed to be tested. And this is reported in page 19 of the annual report. Then there's another one on the reduction in the price of ARVs, and it shows that the tender was awarded of 4.2 billion to a company to supply ARVs for 2 years, and this culminated in a saving of 4 billion, and through that a number of people then were brought into the system and benefited from ARVs. There is an issue around the case finding problem of those people who abscond from treatment. And on the World TB Day, the department launched a program to trace all those people that are not, you know, who have absconded from the treatment, to get them, trace them, and also test family members. You know, so there is a report there in terms of the visits that the department has done. And the other issue which the department had a target on is on the prevention of mother-to-child transmission program. And there is no report in terms of delivery. The other issues around the reinvigorating of the primary health care service delivery system, which the department does report on progress, but there's no target indicated in terms of the strategic objectives. And we are raising this because performance information system is important. You know, now with the delivery outcomes, you know, government is having targets. So it's important that we measure performance against the targets. So this just shows what the department able to deliver, and you know, some weaknesses as well. Then we move over to the expenditure outcomes for 2010-11, and we see that the total budget there was 21.7 billion, and the department overall spent over 20.7 billion. almost 97% of the budget. And in terms of the programs, we see that the biggest there is health services and strategic health programs, which on the strategic health program department spend 98%, and health services 95.8%. And well, in terms of under expenditure, we can see that the international relations, trade and relation program department was only able to spend about 72% of the budget. But overall, it's more or less 97% expenditure, and with some variations across programs. Now, what we found out in terms of the Auditor General report, the department got a qualified audit opinion in 2010-11. And the reasons for that was the lack of maintenance for the asset register, you know, which it's too much money for in terms of assets, capital assets that the department is not managing. The asset register and the Auditor General says that it's important that the department account for this, and I know that in the current financial year there's some work being done on this. And there were matters of emphasis around irregular expenditure of about 43.3 million due to non-compliance with supply chain procedures and regulations, and this is found in page 142. The other issue that the Auditor General raised was the reliability of performance information. So as you can see that I've reported in the previous slides in terms of the delivery vis-a-vis the targets, and the Auditor General said that some of the data reported there, you know, is not reliable. There's no way that you can verify the achievements, and this is a matter of emphasis. And the other issues around conditional grants, I'll give you a presentation in terms of financial performance. But we know that the department is serving about 5 or 6 health conditional grants. And the Auditor General found that there were no systems by the transferring office in terms of the division of revenue to monitor performance. And this was a matter of emphasis. Now, we all know that health is a concurrent function, and the bulk of health services is delivered through provinces. And we felt that it's important that we also give an overview in terms of expenditure outcomes by provinces in 2010-11. And we can see that, you know, the adjusted budget was almost 101 billion by province, and which is about almost 30% of the provincial total expenditure was spent on health. And the third column that just gives variations in terms of what is the component of health budget to the total provincial budget. And the expenditure was about 98 billion, which is, overall is about 97.4 billion. And KZN and Free State were the lowest in terms of expenditure, around 93.4% and 95.4%. And the highest expenditure was recorded in housing, with almost 100.5% and 102.2%. And there are reasons for that, you know, different reasons, of course. In Gauteng, you know, the complaints that there's a pressure put on the health, public health system in the province due to migration and so forth. In Northwest, this is a legacy also in terms of demarcation processes, which affected the baseline of the health department as well as education. So, you know, under expenditure, the health Now, my discussion with the secretary also revealed that the department wanted an overview in terms of the current, the committee wanted an overview in terms of the current expenditure. Like expenditure in 2011-12. So the data is at the 1st August. So there's a month lag in terms of when department submits the expenditure report. So an overall expenditure is around 38.9% as at 31 August. Just to give an overview, we have four quarters. So the National Treasury Saving System, in terms of the expectation around expenditure. Especially is important, this is important for conditional grants, because in the first quarter it is expected that provinces, for instance, will report an expenditure of about 25% and second quarter 50% and so forth. So that is the benchmark. So if a province in the third quarter, in terms of conditional grants, is performing 25% in the second quarter, there is a problem. So the transferring office must, in terms of the Division of Revenue Act, must withhold and engage with the province to get reasons as to why there is low expenditure. So as at 31st August, the expenditure benchmarked by the National Treasury was 41.7. So, and the overall expenditure, or an average expenditure, was 38.9 by provinces. And I think the Eastern Cape, the record is about 42%, and but other provinces were below the expenditure benchmark, but like not that much, you know. So it's important that this is linked to the Section 32 report, that, you know, the issue of expenditure and the benchmark does link together. Then this slide shows the health conditional grant and the expenditure outcomes in 2010-11. And we can see that the conditional grants were about 19.5 billion overall, and the expenditure recorded there was about 18.9, which culminated to 97.1%. And other expenditure was recorded in forensic pathology services and health conditional grants. And there are different levels there. And I mean, the last two bullet points show which provinces recorded less than 90% in terms of forensic pathology. And the last one shows six provinces that spent less than 90% in health revitalization grants. And the residents, I mean, around forensic pathology, we know that there was an issue of the service being shifted from police to departments, and the capacity of the departments to implement and, you know, those services has some variations. I know around the health revitalization program is an area that the FHC we are looking at in terms of delivery models, because I mean, some departments have a problem around infrastructure delivery generally, and we know that the health revitalization grant is an infrastructure delivery grant in a way. And this is expenditures at the 1st August 2011. And we can see that grants that performed below the expenditure benchmark of 1.7 are HIV and AIDS, infrastructure and health revitalization grants. But by not that much, you know, and we expect that maybe in the third and the fourth quarter there might be some changes, especially around HIV/AIDS grants, when more people are taken off to benefit from ARPU. Now this slide, it gives a reflection of on what around conditional grants, the tertiary services grant, as well as the health professions training and development grant. And it's an area that the FSC is still looking at currently. We have commented in the past that through the national tertiary services grant, government should separate it, keep this grant as a grant and separate from the equitable share. But we should develop, government should develop a policy framework indicating service levels and human resource requirements and so forth. And government generally agreed with the principles, but there are still some challenges in terms of mainly around the transfer mechanisms of grants and the expenditure. So we are doing a research on this area, and hopefully we'll be making some recommendations in the 2013-14 submission on the division of revenue. There was a proposal made in 2007-08 around the revitalization grant, and the FSC proposed that this grant should be incorporated into a provincial infrastructure grant by them. Now, what has happened in the system is that government agreed with the FSC recommendation, but what we have seen, and in the current MTF, is that we still have the revitalization grant, and there's a new grant now called health infrastructure. Now, these grants are managed by the national department, but implemented by provinces. And it's important that we also look at issues of capacity of provinces to deliver, and the administrative cost of managing those different grants. And that's another area that we will be making recommendations on. And the last one, its emphasis based on quality of services provided at the clinic, is still a challenge. You know, we have seen that even in the general household survey, you know, there was survey done there to show what the people's perception around quality services in our city, and people are still complaining about the lack of medicines and long queues and so forth. So the issue of quality is important, you know, and through the NHI we hope that this will be attended to. I think this it's more or less the same as the other one. Well, there was a recommendation also made, like the last row there, around the issue of data and survey, in terms of providing data and utilization of services by people who are suffering from TB, HIV, and AIDS. And government agreed that survey would be done. And we are still saying that it's important that we do this survey, and it's part of the recommendation we made in the previous recommendation, that the utilization rates are important to inform budgeting. You know, we need to have an understanding of what is service utilization across provinces and districts, so that we can plan accordingly. And this is an area that we are still seeing still relevant. Well, the other issue is around the current norms and standards for primary health care, as well as the last point there around norms and standards for public hospital system. And while government agreed that this should be done, and we have seen that there is an establishment of the Office of Health Standards and Compliance, but we are still saying that norms and standards for primary health care hospitals are important, you know, and because without them it will be difficult to budget equitably and adequately for services, and that's an area of interest moving forward. Well, the recommendations that we've made in the current submission for the is affecting budget at provincial level. You know, remember that this is a decision that has been agreed upon nationally, but that decision is implemented by provinces through mainly the equitable share, and some instances the equitable share does not respond to national decisions, and more or less like it's important, but it's an externality in a way from a budgeting point of view. So we are making a recommendation that in expanding and the OSD, government should be mindful of the rising public sector wage bill, because it offsets or other services, for example, infrastructure, money for drugs and services. So we need to be mindful of our expenditure there. And also that the full costing of OSD be implementation be made, because as we have seen that there have been some budget adjustments in the past for fiscal years to deal with this issue, because provinces overspend on the health budget. So we are saying that the full costing needs to be done. And preferably, maybe the other way to deal with it is that we must have a specific purpose conditional grant to deal with OSD. And we must not lose sight of the fact that OSD had a purpose, you know, was meant to address residents in the service, not that everybody should benefit from it. So we are saying that we need to formalize performance evaluation with the aim of boosting productivity by emphasizing high competence of health personnel. And that is important, that as we implement OSD, we also link it to performance evaluation. We also make recommendations around the review of and reforms of health fiscal frameworks, looking at the burden of disease, you know, that is putting pressure on public sector health budget. So we are saying that, you know, with regard to MDG 6, because it's one of the agreements that we need to deliver on, MDG 6 is around the AIDS and the reduction in mother to child, mother and maternal and child mortality. And we are saying that we need to review our fiscal framework to take into consideration burden of that disease, but also we are saying that broadly we need to review the conditional grants for HIV and AIDS, taking into consideration the expansion and the delivery and the cost of medicine there. And we are saying that a regular review of usage costs and chronic disease services needs to be done, you know, to inform resource allocation in the public health system. The last one there is around the budget process. You know, we know that currently the fiscal is transferred to provinces, but whether that budget process is done to inform allocations to health districts and hospitals, we are saying that, you know, there seem not to be a methodology informing provinces as to how they need to transfer our budget accordingly for hospitals, depending on the level of service that the hospitals are providing. And we are saying that provinces need to be made accountable for budgeting there. And we are also making a proposal that, in as much as we think that tertiary services are playing an important role, we are saying that they need to be a strengthening of primary health care, because most of the services, as we know, they're happening at primary health care level, and budget needs to respond accordingly to that. And while this is, we have been saying that, you know, in terms of management functions, we are saying that certain functions need to be devolved to service sites. You know, we know that in certain provinces, procurement happens at provincial or maybe head office. And we are saying that, you know, for improvement in hospital around the national health insurance, I mean, it has been acknowledged that there will be an impact in terms of the provision equitable share. You know, once it has been agreed, by then, when we made this recommendation, the green paper was not published, and we recommended that no fiscal arrangements need to be made clear. What will be the impact on the provinces? Then, in conclusion, Chairperson, we are saying that there are issues that the committee and the department need to consider moving forward. One is around the issue of OSD, you know, in the system. It's serving a huge impact in terms of provincial health budgets. You know. Even in the last financial year, I think 8 provinces overspent on their health budget. So it's an area and it's been recurring. We are saying that in responding to the Auditor General matter of emphasis, the department need to give priority on the maintenance of asset register system in compliance with the Division of Revenue Act and Government Immovable Assets Management Act. And that there must be compliance with the supply chain procedure, you know, because the matter of emphasis is fine. As I said, that we are looking into the issue of health infrastructure funds, we still say that we think that there is a need to rationalize health infrastructure funds because, you know, there are administrative costs if you have health infrastructure grants, the revitalization grants, and so forth. And we are saying that we'll be making a recommendation there because it's not only about budget, but it's also about the capacity to deliver essential infrastructure. The issue of non-financial data, we know that the Editor General is also putting emphasis on non-financial performance, you know, and we are saying that valid, accurate, and complete data needs to be done. And also, it's the monitoring system by the transferring office, you know, because the department is managing conditional grants. So there are requirements in terms of the division of revenue that it's not only about the transferring of funds, the issue around capacity, but also the actual delivery that the transferring officer must comply to. And lastly, we are in the process of finalizing our submission on the green paper on national health insurance, and through the chair and the commission, that submission will be shared with the committee as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think when I was making the introductions about the people that are with me, I forgot to mention my supervisor, that guy sitting that side from the Office of Institution Supporting Democracy. He's my supervisor. Thank you, Chairperson. I think, Chairperson, these are the issues that we wanted to raise. Let me just emphasize the point that I made in the beginning, that at some point the interaction between the Commission and the Department actually went down, and also with the Committee as well. But in the past 2 years or so, we have had a very good interaction with the department in particular. And we have basically noticed that quite a number of the recommendations that we made, including recommendations that we made as far back as 2000, issue around the norms and standards that the Commission made in 2000. And we have actually seen tangible evidence that the ministry is actually moving very quickly in establishing those and prioritizing the issues around primary health care. With respect to the conditional grants, we are very much aware of the work that the department, together with the National Treasury, is involved with in terms of reviewing those conditional grants. And we have shared part of our technical work around those grants with the department. So I think all in all, as a commission, we are very happy with how our recommendations have been dealt with or are being dealt with by the department. But obviously, there are still issues or challenges that need to be dealt with. And I think a lot of people tend to look at the advent of the NHI as something that might be a panacea for the problems that we have. I think the direction that government has taken in terms of introducing that is actually a very good, in principle, decision that has been taken there to first of all make sure that we actually fix the small problems that the public health system is faced with before we get to the big bang approach. I don't know, Chair, if I can ask my fellow commissioner to say a few words before we open up for... No, she's fine. So we then submit ourselves to you for interrogation, for discussion.
No, you might be right into my for interrogation. No, she does not to talk after 2 May, that's both. Welcome, Makeng. Welcome, Supervisor. You should be sitting beside Supervisor. You should be sitting with them so that you can ask your questions to, or you don't want to ask to so that you can interrogate you and grill you on this other thing. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, in fact, it's actually helping us with this new sort of powers that have been given to Parliament of budget review and recommendations committee. And it is what is very clear is that you are doing a fantastic work for us, where you analyze the department, how they are using their money, and you look at what they said they targeted. And you come up with recommendations as to how they should handle certain things. And obviously that tells me that probably you need to have those technical gurus from hand to sit with you. Probably you have them in the FSC who are going to be telling you where the problems are. But I'm sure there's going to be a few questions that are going to be coming from members. Not really to grill you, but to interact and understand. And that brings me to a point that says we should definitely understand South Africa for us for you to recommend certain things. And the way that has happened, it shows that you really understand South Africa, because South Africa, as far as I'm concerned, is asymmetrical. We've got a very big gap between the rural, the urban, the poor, and the rich. And in fact, when you talk of rural, there are two rural areas which are different as well. There are rural areas where we've got villages, and there are rural areas that are organized with farms. Those are two different things, but we can't treat them as one. And the other part that becomes very pertinent in South Africa, I'm not sure, but I've never heard of anybody talking about this, that there are provinces that are very move a lot of distances to render healthcare services. One of them is the Northern Cape. Obviously, provinces like KZN and Eastern Cape, they follow. Where for somebody to render a proper healthcare service, you've got to move a lot of transport, but you've never seen a recommendation that probably we need to have a grant or something about transport. Because if you could go to Northern Cape and you go to Eastern Cape, you'll find that a lot of money goes into fixing those cars, moving up and down, trying to render healthcare, especially the farmer healthcare service. The other thing that probably why I'm talking about the health gurus is that sometimes we always talk of human resources as separate, that there's such a percentage that goes to human resources, and there's very little that goes to actual working. When you look at a clinic, you can't build a clinic without knowing. I mean, when you build a clinic, it's a clinic because there's going to be a network. there's going to be a doctor. When you build a hospital, there's going to be doctors. If you build a structure and there's no doctor, then it's not a hospital. But we separate the human resources from that. Yet, it's something that it has to be there. You can't say it's a hospital if there's no doctor. We seem to separate and say there's a lot of money that goes to human resources and there's very little that goes to the actual work. And that always makes me get worried. And the other part that's probably in understanding our country is you look at the equitable share, which is by the province, and the grants that you get. But in some provinces, you find that they bundle their equitable share. And then there are problems with their grant funding. So I'm not sure how to put it, but one of them, there's a bundling of the other, not using it for what it is. And maybe let me make an example. You find there's an equitable share to run primary healthcare and certain services. But when you are supposed to say, if this money is for the tertiary institution, then there must be, I must know who I treat at the tertiary institution. But you find that there's no clear demarcation of this patient is supposed to be in the primary healthcare. This one, and there's no proper referral system. As a result, you find that you don't know whether this money is for the grant, this one is the equitable share, because there's no proper referral system. You don't have somebody that says, no, this one can't go to this hospital. The tertiary versus the primary health care. And you see there's a grant for tertiary, but that grant for tertiary gets filled up by the primary health care. These are some of the things I think we need to understand. But I'm very happy, and this is going to help us quite a lot. I was not asking questions, but I was just mentioning some of the things that are happening in South Africa. Remember, that is the report. And Ndate Khumalo, Dr. Khumalo, is ready for questions. Unfortunately, they're not in the suffer. They're not apologizing for saying that we have won. It's not that Khumalo that... Okay. I see the whip, I see Ume and myself. Darekhana, are you up or down? Oh, let me say everybody because I see even. Let's start with you. We'll start from whip down to Honorable Ume.
This is quite dark. Thank you, Chair. Thanks for the presentation. I thought Mr. Khumalo, we are no longer in Hollywood. The specific purpose grant, have you already recommended that the OFC grant be available as a specific purpose grant so that someday we won't have people to say we stole from Peter to give Paul, we stole from this one for OFC. The provinces must be made accountable for budget. Can you just explain a bit for some of us who don't quite, who are not on fair with that? And is it possible to give us the provinces, the 8 provinces that overspent on OSD? Because that is also helps us when we talk to their annual report. Thank you.
I didn't see your hand, Makanya. Do you have a question? Do you have what's the control? Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. I think it came on the right time, whereby we had had the Auditor General, we had the annual report, now we have. And really, at a certain stage, a person asked herself, why are we really deviating? Why are we all not doing what we are supposed to do if we are having the structures which can support, like we are seeing that? I would like to know that how often does the FSC interact with the department? And I would be knowing that we are talking about the national department and the provincial department. Why am I asking that? If I see the recommendation, and I don't think that it will be proper if we stay for a year, then we only interact when we see things. Is there any regular interaction? Then another thing, I think that they have already said it, but I want to still say, to be saying you acknowledge, because the moment I saw all this recommendation, I asked myself, do you know the issue of recommendation? You can recommend, I can take it, I cannot, I may not take it. Then, but you said that you are happy that they have taken some of the recommendation. But I would like to know if you have recommended and they do nothing about it, what is the next step? How do you interact with that one? Then, page 5 of the presentation, the upper slide, whereby you gave us the percentage around hospital revitalization grant. And you find that hospital revitalization, that's where a lot of problems are, whereby the projects are not being done. Now, my question will be, how do you interact with public works? Because you find that in the infrastructure, that is building of the clinics, the hospital, the Department of Health use agents like public works and other implementing agents. And irrespective of them, at the end of the day, they are the ones who are having money. But you find that the mess which is around the infrastructure is being done by public works. I will want to know, how do you help us on the public works concept, to be saying that sometimes when you recommend around infrastructure, you find that it's not health which has done that. The health was supposed to monitor and evaluate. Then the implementing agent. Then my last question, Chairperson, is it the last? No, I don't think. it's around the, on page 6, whereby you talk about that you propose that greater emphasis be placed on improving the quality of service provided at the clinic. Then, where I'm sitting, we're coming from a hospice-centric approach, whereby the department was concentrating mostly on the hospital. Irrespective of that, according to Alma Ata declaration, it was emphasized that the primary healthcare as the entrance to health services must be given more priority or more resources or whatever. We are still seeing that. We are not, when we are sitting here, when we go to clinics, it's still really, there is no lot of improvement. And whenever you see the training, the education is still emphasizing on hospitals. Even when you wrote, where you wrote, you talked about the hospital. Irrespective that when you presented, you did mention the hospital. Then I will want to know, how do you do that? Okay, I think I will post that.
I'm sure you understand where we're coming from. We're the portfolio committee for health. We do the oversight and we make laws. And we understand that you are there to see to it that they do the right things with the money that they are given. And you even recommend what they should be doing. So we are, what we are trying to do here, we're trying to make sure that with the oversight that we do and our constituencies, what we are seeing, whether these recommendations are really fitting, what we are seeing down there. We are not the implementer, but we are just observing. And the department is the one that's supposed to take all the recommendations. Member?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. On page 3, on the transferring officer, you mentioned that actually the AG, the audit outcome, that they do not adequately monitor expenditure and non-financial performance information. What type of recommendations, specific recommendations, you know, in such instance, would you sort of recommend? And also, you know, on issues of irregular audit, I know probably you would recommend, as you always do, but I mean, I think Honorable Sakhale has already asked, I mean, what will be the next step? If people do not comply, you recommend nothing happens. Because it's actually shocking that you mentioned that you recommended in 2000 about, you know, the establishment of London standards, and only now it's happening actually in this current financial year. So it's actually an alarming way of doing things in terms of how long it takes. You know, when people recommend that we take even 10 years to do things, and yeah, it talks to actually the report of the Auditor General to say if the minister or the DG do not take action for people who do wrong things or people who don't do anything, you know, we will always have this vicious cycle of non-performance and all that. And then, I'm not sure. On page 5, on the 2012 health conditional grant, the benchmark, what were the reasons, particularly the health infrastructure that were given, if there are reasons for low expenditure or slow expenditure? And then on page 6, on progress, you say the FSC is conducting a research project on health conditional grants. So I'm not sure on the other column, you've got like years, financial year 2006-2007. Was that the year when you recommended? And if so, I mean, how far are you with the research? By when do you think you'll be finished? Just give us information on your research in terms of the sample, where you're doing it, how you're doing it, you know, and the probable date to publish everything and, you know, the findings of this, because it will be very interesting to see what will happen after that. And actually, it's so demoralizing at times, you know, to think about, I mean, you are doing something for the department, you recommend, and nothing happens up until 10 years later and all that. And I'm not sure, now that you've spoken to issues of research, I was one of the people who were trained with the settlement development system in this case, by a private company that was contracted, blah, 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 to do this, and I was doing a trainer program on this. It would be interesting if you, I'm not sure if yourself or anyone else, can do a research as well in terms of the effectiveness of this, because then maybe if it comes from, you know, an organized body like yourself, it will have some type of impact, even though it might take longer to be, the recommendations to be implemented. But it will be interesting if, you know, such a research can be done by a body of your stature. And then health recommendations, your second bullet on page 8, you're talking about functions such as procurement, blah, blah, human resources and all that. I know in Gauteng, they are trying to delink, like, health, certain functions from GSSC. What is the take of the GSSC and the health sector? Because my view is that it's not happening, it's not on, it's not cannot wait. Certain that there needs to be certain ways of saying yes, we can purchase this and you know cut the queue short, but in within the legal system itself. But what we're seeing there is something. It's administratively overwhelming and disastrous when it comes to health. This one is just your view in terms of the shared services centers that's been being used in provinces.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. And to me, I say thanks to the presenters. You know, some of us come from this background of just being patient, not the academic. So now, this small document to me has enlightened to me more than the biggest document that we always receive. And I'm happy about the services that you are trying to render in helping the health department. You know, as a layman in the streets, I was never aware that the provinces are independent from national departments. Now, if you hear people making research trying to help, you get tempted to say, with this audit, where we always hammer or question the national office about the expenditure, which most of the time they are not in charge of, you know, managing it. I'm a bit concerned because anytime we meet with them, we ask them questions whereby we know that provinces are autonomous. Now, with your research, based on what the Constitution says, how can we bridge this gap, especially in the Department of Health? Because it's a worrying factor that every province operates according to its own way of operating, the way it fits them. There's no, you know, uniformity of say, even if provinces are independent, but here are the guidelines for them to operate the same. Now, in that regard, you find that the province wants to deal with its finances the way it fits them. But at the end of the day, the money comes from national office. And for us to meet provinces, it's like a marathon. We always deal with the national department. In your own understanding, what is it that we can do? But there is a constitution around that. The second question relates to the grants that comes from national to provinces. I heard you saying you are busy with some recommendations around that. Can you steal that information and just give us? Because, you know, grants are also used by provinces the way they want to. If I want to buy bread instead of egg, this is my house, this is my territory. Whether the grant says A, whether the grant says whatever, but in my own territory, in my pocket, I can use it whichever way. The last one is, I want to share this joke, which always the chairperson does, that these big institutions, in your research, don't you think that they can be controlled nationally, so that the funds that goes to these hospitals, like Abu Chris Hani, you know, so that the provinces should deal with the primary health care, the district hospitals, you know, you get what I'm trying to say. Along your research, can you find out for us how possible it is that we must close the gap between the province and the national? But also when I was home, I was told that there are clinics that are controlled by provinces and that are controlled by municipalities. Now, it creates a problem where there's discrepancies. You know, sometimes you go to a clinic, there's no medicine. You confront the municipality, they'll say it's a provincial clinic. So, thank you.
Thank you, Madam.
Thanks, Chair. I'm not going to have a preamble to my questions. I'm just going to go straight to the questions. on your slide 14, you are saying there is you recommend that there should be a full costing of OSD implementation. That full costing of OSD implementation must be undertaken and a national government must take responsibility for funding, preferably through a specific purpose conditional grant. My impression was that OSD will then become part of the salaries at one point. You can't get your OSD every year. Once your salary is at a particular level, it must. So, how will the national take that over when it is now supposed to be budgeted for by the provinces? And it can't be a continuous thing. You can't have an OSD every year. There must be a point where you say, now we have dealt with all the problems which created, which OSD was supposed to address. And although from the department yesterday, they said that they are, what do you call it, unintended consequences of OSD, which they are going to deal with. It seems as if every decision we make, there are unintended consequences. I don't know where they are the financial buffers who have got to look into those things before they take place. And the second, just below the sentence just below that, you are saying you recommend that to formalize performance evaluation with aim of boosting productivity by emphasizing high competence of health personnel. All the time when performance evaluation is going to come in, there's always problems with the labor movement saying that, no, we must be part of that. Maybe you might have thought about how this can be done easily and faster. And on slide 16, the middle point, it said certain functions such as procurement, human resources, and financial management should be devolved to hospital management. I think it will address some of the things which has been raised by Honorable Moreira about shared services. But this calls upon us also having the issue of addressing the issue of norms and standards. If you are going to devolve the area, I would like to get just your opinion on this.
Thank you,
Madam.
Honorable
Moreira,
what has been doing?
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for the presentation. Just want to refer you to page 4, the top slide, where you've indicated the provincial percentage allocation to health. It concerns me that, for example, Mpumalanga is the lowest allocation of 24.9 and Western Cape the highest at 36.2. So it's a massive difference of 11%. Is there no minimum sort of obligation that each province has to allocate towards health at all? And what are you doing to address the disparities? I understand that, you know, there is a provincial independence and they can allocate, you know, it's up to each province to decide what they're allocating. But if you look at, from Mpumalanga, less than 25% of their budget going towards health. They must have an impact, negative impact, on the services available to the public in that province. You know, so if you can just elaborate on that. And then on page 6, the top slide, the bottom point, you talked that the NHI is going to improve quality of services. That's what you said. But how does the insurance fund improve quality of services? How do you make that link? Because NHI, as far as I said, it's just an insurance fund. It's a funding mechanism. It doesn't ensure quality. That was a verbal comment that was made. It wasn't written down about the NHI going to improve quality. But on the next page, on page 7, you do talk about the Office of Standards Compliance, which in my view will, if it's implemented properly, will ensure improvement of quality at health facilities. But have you given any thought to how independent that body should be? Because in its current draft form, have you made any suggestions to the health departments? Because in its current form, the CEO is appointed by the minister and reports directly back to the minister, which obviously compromises independence. And how would you see us strengthening the Office of Standards Compliance with, as far as independence is concerned? And then on page 8, with recommendations for 2012-13, the last point regarding the NHI scheme, did you give any proposals for how that scheme should be funded at all when you gave your recommendations to the department? And if so, what were your recommendations as far as the funding of the scheme is concerned? Thank you.
Thank you.
My question is, I think some of them are asked, especially one of the Hanare has touched on what I think about the OEP on page 15 in the last 2 minutes. But my question to add on that, as you know, that the OEP is a problem. Even though it is said that the nurses have got the OEC, but there is no clear strategy to retain the nurses. And noting that now the OEC has been allocated to doctors and other practitioners, is there any recommendation? Is there any clear implementation? Are you sure now that there is a clear implementation of OEC as a retention strategy? Because it was said that it was not done in the right way, and that's why there were so many problems. Some were given large amounts of money, and others didn't get anything. But having noted that, it's difficult to say some are going to refund the money because it's their fault. But do you think now, when you say that you are giving these recommendations about this OEC, there must be a clear strategy, and what do you think there is a clear strategy? Do you think there is a clear strategy now for this implementation? On page 8, slide 15, let's 2, we talked about the new funding for HIV-A, in spite of page 5 last bullet, which is said that the HIV-A infrastructure and the fertilization grants have a slow expenditure. Now that you say that the fund must be reduced, yes, I agree with you on condition that we are looking at goals 4, 5, and 6, target health by 2015. Do you think, therefore, now they're going to the fast track of this pace, noting that in that slide there is a low percentage, 32% and 31%. Now I'm concerned, as you said, that you want the funding to be reduced. Do you think that now there will be no slow expenditure, no slow pace expenditure? Thank you.
Thank you, Martin. Those are the questions. So I think we just respond to them. I mean, if you can clap that in your response. I'm just interested in knowing how well known by the provinces. Do they know that they might know it, but I'm just wondering that probably they don't know. I remember one time you went to Eastern Cape, you went to the legislature, but I don't think a lot of people, even that time, it was not even close, because it seems as if they don't know it. The relationship with the department, I know you said there was a time where it was down, now it's starting to move up. Do you think you're going to be able to maintain that good relationship so that they could understand what you are doing? Because I've got a feeling that some of the things are happening because people don't know.
No, thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you, honorable members, for the comments and the questions that have been raised. Let me start by responding to some of the comments that you made, Chairperson, at the beginning, or at least, with the last ones, last two, and then I come back to the ones that you made at the beginning. The issue of the Commission and its relationship with its stakeholders is one of the key strategic pillars that we have identified, because we conducted what we call the stakeholder perception survey, just to get people's perceptions and understanding of what the Commission does. The company that we engaged to do that for us sent a number of questionnaires to members of parliament even here. The response rate was very low. Now, that can be one of two things. Either it's the questionnaires were sent to the wrong place, they were not appropriately designed for parliamentarians to take time to go through, or nobody knows what the FSC is, or nobody cares. So quite a number of issues came out of that survey, and we decided deliberately that we are going to intensify our relationships with our stakeholders, starting with our national departments, and then going down to the provinces. Parliament, we basically thought the issue of the money bills amendment procedure and related matters act would actually open the way for us to interact with various departments, rather than the focus that we had actually had with simply the finance committees in the two houses of parliament. So that is something that we basically want to sustain. But obviously, as you would know, Chairperson, some of these things really depends on characters. So at a point, you might find that there's somebody who is very much willing to drive a process like that. But as part of making sure that we can be able to sustain those, we are actually in the process of drafting protocols of engagement with all of our stakeholders. And that would probably just map up a way through which we can meet maybe four times or twice with the committee in a year. So we try to find space to actually interact in a very structured way. It's been very unstructured in the past, but we try to move towards making it a structured kind of an approach to dealing with our stakeholders. And so I am very confident that we'll be able to sustain the relationships that we've been developing in the past 2 years. Now, you made quite a number of comments that speak about the distinction between rural and urban, and also within the rural space, you also have different types of rural areas. And then you also made reference to issues of transport in relation to distance that services that people must travel to get the services or to deliver the service. And I think I agree with you that those are very key issues that we have to be dealing with. I would say that especially if one looks at the Northern Cape, it's a very complicated issue, because even in the design of the equitable share formula, it's been an issue. Because now you've got to balance this distance issue with topography issues. For example, in the Eastern Cape and KZN, you find these kinds of peculiarities that you need to deal with in making resources available. Now, if you think about it in terms of the transport issue, in the education sector, we've got the very direct thing that says scholar transport. We don't think about it in terms of the health sector. What happens when kids are not at school? They must go to a clinic or they must go to a hospital. What happens? Those are issues that, in terms of how we assess and analyze the transfer system, we want to try and bring the social sector issues together, rather than just looking at them as health, education, and welfare. And I think, Honorable Chair, you would probably recall, and that brings me to this issue of the time that it takes to implement recommendations and the frustration. I think, Honorable Chair, you must have still been the MEC for Health when we first spoke about this issue of a costed norms approach to the division of revenue. And what we were suggesting there was to take health, education, and welfare services. At that point, social security grants were still a provincial matter. And what we could see was that when you make these allocations, because there are cash transfers that must, that the province must make, so those are social security grants, what then happens is that the soft types of programs, like your transport, you know, medicines, and all of those kinds of things, school nutrition, those are the programs that actually suffer. Because now people, if you don't pay the pensions, they will take you to court. And the Eastern Cape was the biggest case that the Constitutional Court pronounced on. So you get this kind of a thing. And so these kinds of soft programs where you don't have a direct benefit, they tend to suffer the most. And so try to deal with these issues of dealing with distances and all of that. The transfer formula actually has what they call the institutional component, which is meant to do exactly that. But the unfortunate part is that in the way in which it is applied, it's given in equal amounts to everybody. Yet the idea was to deal with these types of provinces like Northern Cape. And so there were arguments that were raised around what happens in these denser areas. So there are social problems that you must deal with. So there are arguments both sides of the story. But I think in terms of the review process, I think in preparing his presentation, Temoko did not mention the fact that as a commission we've taken a view around the provincial equitable share formula, and that the current formula is no longer consistent with the delivery model that government is adopting. So the government is now focused on outcomes, and those outcomes are basically clustered, so they cut across the department. They also cut across spheres of government. So the formula must be able to respond to those kinds of things. Now, in its current structure, it does not actually take that into consideration. Now, in health, the healthcare component has been reviewed. Now, the first recommendation around a review of the healthcare component that was made by the Commission was made in 2000. That we need to focus more on the demand for healthcare services in a province, which means we must look at healthcare utilization rate and all such issues. Now, it's only that has only been taken into consideration in the last year. All along, we've been using medical aid versus non-medical aid population, and that's not a good indicator of demand for healthcare, because our medical aid population, they run out of medical aid maybe the first 4 months of the year. The funds are exhausted, so they come back to the public health system, and the allocations that we have made have actually not catered for those people. So the health system is always under pressure. And so when one looks at health as a sector, the reason why even the Minister of Finance, when the current Minister of Finance, when he first came in, he came in with a story that says we have been underfunding health. And it's simply the way in which we've been calculating some of these things. Now, let me go to the issue of the grants and how they interact with them with the equitable share. Now, the health sector has got the biggest amount of grants that come through in the form of conditional grants. And now there's an issue that was raised about the independence of provinces. which I would say, in terms of the constitution, there's nothing like that. Provinces, the three spheres are interdependent. So whatever is decided in the form of cooperative governance or whatever you want to put into that picture at a national level has to be implemented somewhere. Now, the problem that we've been having is that we have not defined the norms and standards at which these concurrent functions must actually be delivered. So you've got to have something called the minimum level of services that you require, so that when you transfer money and you have set the norms and standards, anybody that's actually providing a service below the national norms and standards, there must be a reason. So there's accountability processes that must actually kick in. And I think in terms of how this portfolio committee can actually be able to deal with provinces when things are not actually happening, it's not only in terms of these grants that the finance committees at least hold them to account. It's in terms of the services that they must deliver and the allocations that they've made, that Mr. Waters' question around to why do we have such a discrepancy between Mpumalanga and the Western Cape. The finance committee is holding them accountable. So for me, an approach that you could take is with your issues that you want to raise, you have a joint sitting with the select committee on finance. That's the committee that deals with them directly on these kinds of issues. So provinces come here, they must come in account with the national department and the transferring officer on the conditional grant. The questions around whether there's a substitution effect, so that what you're raising, Honorable Chair, is that it can happen that when you have a grant, so we've got a grant that we say this is the National Tertiary Services Grant, and the idea there is to compensate a province that provides those tertiary services for the fact that you will get people coming from across the boundary, because the way these resources are allocated, they form people. So when services are not available in Mpumalanga, they must come to Gauteng. And so that grant is meant to compensate Gauteng for those types of services that it provides. That's called an inter-provincial dimension. That's the principle. Now what happens is that in certain instances, you might find that Gauteng, having its own budget for health, so the bigger the grant you get, there's a tendency to move resources away, because we've got this provincial executive authority that must decide on the budget. Because you can allocate the money, the only way that you can control what actually happens to that money is to put it through a conditional grant or ensure that you hold people to account in terms of the Division of Revenue Act. Now, unfortunately, in this country, the Division of Revenue Act has not actually been used to control any of these people that, or accounting officers or whoever that is. It's got no penalty, let me put it that way. So people actually can violate provisions and there are no consequences. Even though if you go through the act, there must be something that must actually happen. Certain things don't happen. So in that respect, the commission will actually review certain aspects of the Division of Revenue Bill. So there will be some recommendations that will be coming through, because we have realized that it's just been used as an instrument that allocates the resources, but no one is held accountable for how those resources are then utilized. So there's an issue there. Now, coming to the issue of the OSD, and I agree fully with the Honourable Member that OSD was meant to be an intervention by national government to deal with those skills that were becoming scarce and improve the conditions of service of those people. So it was not supposed to be an institutional thing that you must actually now institutionalize, so that even unions can come in and say, we want to bargain on this one. So when collective bargaining comes, we must actually now discuss what is going to happen to OSD. actually picked up in one of the discussions in the finance sector. Presidents, OSD, defense, OSD. So everybody now must have OSD. Very soon the commission will also want OSD, I'm sure. But that wasn't the point. Well, pardon me. But that wasn't the point. The point was an intervention to correct a trend that was happening and that needed to be corrected to target specific skills in specific sectors. Now, what then happened is that instead of government taking a decision to say, okay, you have agreed on this as a sector, here is the money. And it's strictly for that and it's strictly for these people. Provinces were just informed that this was going to happen. The money was going to come through the equitable share. You know how this thing happens? When you do the equitable share, there's the vertical division. So that is added to the provincial pool. And then you just allocate like that. So it doesn't matter how many of those specialized skills that you are targeting in Limpopo versus in Gauteng or in the Western Cape. The formula will just generate an allocation. This is a pool. Money is very fungible, so you can't distinguish from what you get to say, oh, okay, this one is for OSD. You can't. It's fungible. So the provincial budget process kicks in and they make their budget and they decide to pay everybody. And suddenly, they find themselves they are under pressure in this area and in that area. And that pressure basically persists now because it destabilized the structure of the budget. Even if you say, let's grow back, you will grow back. But how many years is this going to take you to? Because you can't say, today I'm taking back this money that I gave you last month. It can't happen like that. So these things are real. And why we are saying that government must take a decision is so that we can actually be able to control this intervention and keep it as an intervention by national government. National government making the resources available outside of the equitable share. We are having a discussion currently with the National Treasury, and I am very certain that we will have significant differences with them. But that is the Commission's view, and that's what we want to put to Parliament to think about, because it's something that is very real. Provinces have to deal with it. The minister can come and present his budget. You will mention the personnel budget, and part of those personnel budgets growth is because of this OSG. Everybody wants it now. Let me go to the next set of questions that were raised. How often does the FFC interact with the department, both national and provincial? We, like I indicated, the national department, we have actually now started interacting quite intensively. As I said, the research director of the commission is in an advisory capacity for the minister on health data and number information kind of issues. And so that's an advisory team, an expert advisory team that sits every second month. So the relationship with the department, including the discussions that we're having with them currently on the NHI, because we must make our own submission on that. I'm very happy with the relationship with the national department. With the provincial department, it's a bit complicated. Let me say that in the provinces, we basically deal with the treasuries and the finance committees in Parliament. What we have been trying to do now is to use the speaker's forum to basically get into the provincial legislatures and get to the various committees. And once we start interacting with the various committees in the legislature, we will then be able to build that relationship with the relevant departments, because this kind of a presentation we require when we vote to make it in a province, we basically require the department to be represented if possible by the head of the department. So that is how we're planning on engaging with them. We also, through the secretary, there's something called Association. We are using them to now draw up some protocols of engagement with the legislatures. We've had problems with some of the provinces. Like I'm actually not very worried to say this. The Western Cape, for example, we have a problem with the legislature. If the finance committee, they basically ignored us. And it's something that we still have to raise again with the relevant authorities. So up to today, we have not actually presented our recommendations to the Western Cape legislature. It's very late in the process, the only one. So sometimes you do face these things because you don't have any formal arrangement as to how and when we must interact. So we try to deal with those kinds of issues. What happens when you make recommendations and nothing is done? Now, this actually brings me to the money bills amendment procedure. The primary recipient of our recommendations is Parliament. Now, these recommendations have to do with the budget, the division of revenue. Now, Parliament, in terms of the Constitution, has those powers to deal with the recommendations of the Commission. And in any way, the Minister is forced to respond and say, I did not accept this recommendation because of ABCD. He is also forced to say, I have accepted this recommendation, but in most cases, he will not see where it says this is how it is actually going to be implemented. In most cases, that is not there. So nobody questions those. As a commission, we don't have the power to say, what did you do? And why did you not do it? We can have the conversation with the minister, but that's as far as it ends. But now, because of the Money Bills Amendment Procedure related method, which is a specific provision for Parliament to, when considering the budget and preparing the budget review recommendations report, to consult with the FFC and take into consideration the recommendations that the Commission has made, we are actually the happiest lot now, because we think Parliament will be able to deal with those kinds of issues where recommendations are accepted but nothing then happens. Now Parliament can actually now put that as part of its program through that process.
Thank you. Thank you.
To
both chiefs, I just wanted to add on this issue of implementation of recommendations. This is not the issue of compliance that we're dealing with. There's no requirement to comply because it's a recommendation. The issue is more a question of effectiveness, and I think that's what Parliament is concerned with. But there is also an element of performance in effectiveness. And I think in addition to the role that Parliament can play, using the recommendations of the FFC in its interaction with the Department of Health, there is another important role player. One of the difficulties is that when a department is asked a question, what have you done in relation to this recommendation, it can say, well, this is what we've done. But that is not good enough as a response. I think Parliament requires more specificity. Parliament will want to know what is better, what is the same, what is worse, if anything, on any particular recommendation. Let's take, for example, the one which we have here. Greater emphasis be placed on improving the quality of service provided at clinics. Now, I think there you want a specific answer. You don't want a general answer. The ministry of the presidency responsible for monitoring evaluation, I would say, comes in here. I think this is a very important role play. A new role player, a new role. But here is where the specifics can really come in. However the ministry does it is another matter, whether it requires the department to provide those specifics. And it then says, well, do we have evidence? Okay. But I think this is a very important role player. Part of the difficulty that we're all confronted with is that government is a system. And unfortunately, you need different parts of the system
to all do their role in order for the system to work. And I would say that one of the reasons why the system is not working as well as you would like it to work is that we need these role players to play their roles effectively. So I just wanted to add that particular point.
Okay. So obviously I think one is always confronted with this kind of a problem where you get a response that says you agree, it does not say how we're going to do it. So it just becomes a kind of a banal kind of a response that you can't put any measure or yardstick to it. But I think the point is made. Now there was a question around how does the Commission interact with the Department of Public Works and what is our view around how that department actually goes about doing its business. I think, let me just say that even as I sit here, I'm sitting with a Department of Public Works problem. Our lease, now this is not building anything, it's just putting a signature and saying, no, you can go ahead and extend this lease or whatever. Our lease at the office expired in June. 6 months prior to that, we sent documents to that department. No, we need to renew our lease up to today, as we can't get it. So I'm on a month of monthly. So that summarizes my point about. Okay, so we can leave that. That's my assessment of there is a lot that is not right in the department, and unfortunately, it's quite central to most of these programs. I mean, the kind of money that we're talking about, infrastructure allocation, is quite massive amounts of money, and obviously, if it's not happening, then there's a problem. But the issue of quality improvement, I'm going to leave that to Tewoko and Commissioner Abraham. The training and education also I leave to the two of them. But to the issue around monitoring of grants, as I indicated, the conditional grants belong to the National Department. The National Department goes out and bids for those grants. If there's an increase in the size of the grant, the National Department that has actually done it. Now, what we have is the Division of Revenue that actually talks about a transferring officer and specifies the duties of the transferring officer. Now, if things are not happening in a province, and I just want to emphasize this point, if things are not happening in a province, we are very quick to judge the province and say, this province is not spending money on this and that, but we don't actually knock on the door of the transferring officer, because in terms of the Division of Revenue, there are responsibilities. So if they don't monitor to such an extent that you get to a point where money actually has to be taken away and put somewhere else because they are failing to spend, because that will happen. And it's quite sad, because when such kinds of interventions happen, it's not the department that suffers, but it's the people that are supposed to be receiving the service that actually suffer. Now, there is a point at which the notion, especially around conditional grants, that the province's fault alone should actually be debunked, and we need to accept that National Transferring Officers have a serious responsibility of ensuring that they have capacity to spend and the money is actually being spent in the right. That money belongs to the National Department. It might be reflected there saying this is the share that goes to provinces. The point is it's the National Department's responsibility. That is why it is a conditional grant rather than equitable share. On the implementation of the norms and standards, I think you linked it with the NHI and improvement in quality. I want to link that as well, because what happens with the NHI is that there are preparatory issues that we identify. Before you actually start implementing, you need to clear a lot of ground And the issue around the norms and standards is one of those. Now, whether the office is supposed to be an independent office or not, we have not actually, as a commission, pronounced on that particular matter. We are, as our slide shows, we are currently putting together our submission, and very soon we will actually be discussing those issues. And once that is done, it will be shared with the committee as well, because whatever report we prepare, we have an obligation to report to Parliament. So even if it's directed that the minister requests this and whatever, we still have to send that report to Parliament as well. So that is something that you will definitely, as a committee, get as soon as that work is completed. The issue on the review of conditional grants by the Commission. I think the one thing that I mentioned is that health controls the biggest chunk of conditional grants in as far as grants going to provinces are concerned. Now, these conditional grants started off with specific objectives. They were changed over time, and they were changed and rechanged. The point is now, after 15 years or 17 years of the system, and after about 14 years of experience with this conditional grant, there are obviously certain weaknesses that have been identified. Our initial approach was based on the government delivery model at that particular point in time. So we have had to rethink this so that we align it with government's new approach to service delivery, which is outcomes-based. Now, this also now has to take into consideration the advent of the NHS, because there are implications for some of these grants when the NHS kicks in. And so it's work that is actually being done at this point in time. And in terms of when we are likely to expect the output, it's work that is being done for the 2013 Division of Revenue. That means we will table those recommendations around about May in 2012. But if the committee has an interest in looking at the progress report, we can actually facilitate the process, because right now in November, I can't remember the exact date, we will be having a commission review session, because the secretary has basically prepared the technical report. The commission then meets in November, and in our November meeting is actually open to stakeholders. So if some of the members are keen on coming, we can facilitate the process that we can actually be able to come and then pick up on the issues and probably also make some inputs on what is actually being done. It would be very welcome from our side. I'll give the GSSC to you. And also the effectiveness of performance issues. Okay, I think I've spoken to the issue of the provincial independence versus independence. I think that's been addressed. The grants and the work that we are doing. Okay, you want to add?
I think that the notion of independence has to be considered as not being absolute. Because of, I think, historical difficulty in ensuring that provinces did perform effectively, did spend their budget effectively, and a situation where obviously national governments wouldn't have control, but there would be some mutual accountability, let's call it that. Mutual accountability between national governments and provincial governments. We saw the introduction of the Intergovernmental Relations Act, which was really based on the understanding that everybody has to perform their role up to the standard required if we want to see the system working effectively. And so I would say that if anybody were to come to Parliament or make any argument that they are independent and that therefore, you know, I don't know, it would be absurd to think how that would justify non-expenditure or ineffective expenditure or ineffective performance. The two things are not related. Mm. There is a requirement to be effective. Now, national government has many mechanisms to ensure that the provinces do perform on conditional grants. The problem I think that we are reflecting on today is that they are not using those mechanisms effectively, or they are not using those mechanisms at all. And what we have reflected on today in these columns here is that if you do not implement certain ideas which you agree with, it doesn't matter if it's the FFC's recommendation. It really doesn't matter. Once it leaves the FFC, the recommendations are there. And if you agree with the recommendations, then you must implement them, and you must implement them timeously. Because if you do not implement them timeously, you actually damage the whole performance and effectiveness of the system. And I think this is what we are seeing. We are seeing that the systemic issues are not being dealt with. The setting of norms and standards is a vital mechanism for national governments to promote effective intergovernmental relations, effective expenditure, and actual results in the system. So, while Bongani has been a little bit politer, I think, in his response, indicating that, well, yes, the department is working on this and working on that, I think we have to acknowledge that if recommendations which are accepted are not implemented within the space of 12 months, and there is no good explanation for that, we are actually going to see damage to the system, damage to the effectiveness of the system, and we are not going to see increasing effectiveness. Norms and standards are not just a good idea. They are vital for ensuring that the intergovernmental system works. And that is why the FFC makes its recommendations. Because it understands that intergovernmental systems and intergovernmental dynamics are difficult by definition. You can't make somebody do something. But you can set in place norms and standards. Once those norms and standards are there, they are not national government's norms and standards. They are South Africa's norms and standards. And so I don't apologize for emphasizing this matter, that the turnaround time and the vast majority of the Commission's recommendations relate to norms and standards. Norms and standards for A, B, C, D, X, Y, Z. If we do not implement these systems, write up these norms and standards, where, you know, as you said, it takes 10 years, it takes 4 years. By the time those 10 years have passed, or the 4 years have passed, new issues have arisen in the system. So had we done the norms and standards 9 years ago, right, we would have then found, oh, but this doesn't work, or this could work better, and we could then revise it. So in fact, we see systemic failure over and over and over again, not once, but multiple times. And so I think it is really necessary to stress that national government has the facilities and the mechanisms at its disposal to ensure effective intergovernmental relations. Thank you.
Thanks. Let me just respond to one final issue and then I'll hand over to the speakers for a few things here. The Honourable Waters, you raised an issue around whether we have looked at the funding options for the NHI. You would recall that one of the issues that the Minister tabled when he tabled the budget that he spoke to, and also you find that in the budget review for 2011, was a
discussion that was required by South Africans on how we will be able to fund this, and he made certain suggestions on possible funding instruments. Now, as a commission, we are actually looking into that. You probably recall that at some point in when we made our submission on the Division of Revenue Bill for 2011, we actually mentioned certain numbers around what we thought the NHI would cost, and also in that submission we had played around with that. We've got a macroeconomic model for South Africa. So we played around with the different types of instruments that one could actually use, but we haven't actually taken any decision on what we would actually prefer. At that particular point as well, when we conducted that exercise, it was based on numbers that were being bandied about, because there was nothing official that had been tabled by government in terms of the NHI and what the estimates from government in terms of the cost were going to be. So we went on numbers that were being bandied around, including those that had been used by the working group that was actually doing that for the African National Congress. So it was just a modeling exercise that we have conducted. But I'm sure we will be making a concrete pronouncement in terms of what we think would be the best way to fund it. And as I say, that what is important at this particular point in time is that we are in a period that is very uncertain, and the revenue that we have and that we are projecting for the next 3 or so years is actually going to be getting scarcer and scarcer, because we've got these big projects that we have in place. It's the job creation story. It's also the NHI review. So all of those things we must actually take into consideration and look at what debt tolerance levels, our GDP ratios and all of that. And that's part of the issue that the minister also tabled an issue around fiscal rules for South Africa. Do we want those fiscal rules? And if so, what should they be? So those are issues that we're taking together in terms of how we're going to proceed with this. Can I ask do you want to start with the GSS?
I think you've answered most of the questions, but I think that the point that I'm coming, Honorable Waters will correct me if I'm wrong, the point that I was coming in addition to what you have answered was saying, can the insurance funding improve the quality of health services? Oh. Probably, no, you don't need to. To answer it, but I just want to say, you know, it is a funding mechanism. We have been funding health. Despite the funding that we have been using in funding health has not given us better food since the democratic dispensation. Now, it says, obviously, when you change the funding way, that is going to impact on the quality of service, how we are funding. Hence, the idea that if we do this way, probably it's going to improve the quality of service. Because the one that we've been doing has not improved it. I think the answer is that, but you can continue, Commissioner.
The Chair, I think you've put words in my mouth there, if I may just clarify. Because since you quoted me, I was asking whether or not just changing the funding mechanism would improve quality of healthcare. I think the simple answer is no, it won't. I think everyone agrees that. You have to enforce minimum norms and standards, which has been said quite eloquently here. And the fact that the current funding system doesn't work, it's not the funding. We have enough money, if you look around the world. The fact is you don't enforce minimum norms and standards and quality and hold people to account, and that's the problem. And you can double or triple the health budget as much as you like. if we don't get those basic fundamentals right, nothing will change. Thank you.
We will debate this.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm just going to tie up a few issues that are not necessarily connected to each other. I'll start with the shared services center, which I know a little bit about. I would say that the model of a shared services center is a good model. Theoretically, there is nothing wrong with the model. In fact, the idea that you can manage things more efficiently for a very large institution is quite practicable, quite realistic. I think the difficulty comes in that the way the GSSC is organized is everything is organized in the same fashion. And there's no understanding that specific clients, like the Department of Health, or not, let's not say the Department of Health, the hospital specifically, or the clinics, may have different types of requirements from the administration in the same hospital. And so everything is dealt with as if it is an administrative matter, when in fact some of the procurement issues are not administrative, and they need shorter turnaround time. You know, if it takes 3 months to get a pencil, it doesn't matter. Whereas if it gets takes 3 months to get an important piece of medical equipment for an operating theatre, it's a completely different matter. And I would say that the GSSC is organized in such a way that there isn't necessarily a distinction between a pencil and an important piece of equipment in the operating theatre. That may be where the problem lies. I am not convinced that simply putting all those responsibilities back in an inefficient, overburdened health department or health administration is going to solve the problem. I think what we're going to do is we're going to pass the buck from the Department of Health to the GSSC and back again, and in 3 years' time we'll be saying, shouldn't we take this away from the Department of Health and put it back in the GSSC? So I think that, unfortunately, we cannot get away from the fact that our administrative systems generally are inefficient. They are 20th century systems when we live in the 21st century. And I think part of the problem is bureaucracy, that there are huge bureaucracies, and those bureaucracies create and reproduce inefficiency, and the bureaucracy needs to be changed. There are no very large organizations in the world today, organizations that employ hundreds if not thousands of people, that are efficient. And so we have to look at new systems, new models. And so I think this does in fact link to the question about hospice-centric versus clinic-centric or patient-centric systems. Because it would seem that, again, the hospital is a 20th century model. It's a big factory. It's an industrial model. And everything works on a conveyor belt. But the challenges of health in the 21st century cannot be answered by factory-like production in big hospitals, far away from people. The challenges of health today can be much better answered by a more craft-based system, which is what a clinic is. It's a craft environment where the individual matters. Individual doesn't matter in a hospital. You have a heart operation. Okay, let's deal with a heart operation. So the hospital is fine for those big problems which clinics can't solve. But I think the devolution of crucial community and public health matters to clinics is not something that I don't think anything has really been done about it. I don't think it's been thought about. It's been conceptualized. I think we still think about clinics as places where you go and weigh your baby and get a Panado. And I think this is a big, difficult, and fundamental change which needs a formal, structured change management strategy that needs to be discussed and debated between, amongst others, the departments of health and the national legislature. legislature and the provincial legislatures. And this is not something which needs to take 10 years. It is something which can be done in 3 years flat. So that the rest of the 21st century, we can actually see fundamental change in the health system. And then the last point I wanted to make was I just wanted to come back to a very quick comment on OSD. Is that OSD, I think, is beginning to reach the end of its shelf life. Even though we might not have implemented or implemented it effectively, I think what Commissioner Khumalo has been saying, and maybe I can express it sort of more directly, is that once everybody wants it, it's reaching the end of its usable lifespan. And we may find ourselves in a situation where OSD is no longer useful because it might have been useful when the idea was thought of, but the idea has run its course. And the opportunity to attract people into the system from outside, because these are scarce, this is a scarce area of knowledge and skill and professionalism. That has run its course. If we haven't implemented OSD and we implement it today, it's going to take another 3 to 5 years for people in the private sector to say, or people who go and apply their services in the United Arab Emirates to say, hey, actually our public health system pays well for these types of jobs. Let me go and work in the public health system. I think, you know, we're fast approaching the point where even if we do implement OSD, which is why the Commission has been so adamant, do it now, do it now, do it now. Because if we don't do it now, ultimately when we do implement it, the behavior that we wanted to create, we will no longer be able to create. Thanks.
Well, I'll add on a few questions that have been asked. One, first is around our recommendation on accountability by provinces for hospital budget. And I want to link this to the issue of nonsense standards for budgeting. Because currently the practice is that when provinces are budgeting, they will adjust budgets for inflation, you know, and this is what we call historical budget, and add some few amounts to the baseline without checking what is the demand. And that is why you find that in the year, there's a shortage of medicine and the demand is going up. So we are saying that we must have a scientific method to evaluate provincial budget. But in the absence of norms and standards, it becomes difficult, you know, to come up with a methodology to do that. And I want to relate that to this slide and column 3, because the honorable member has raised an issue that not in Mpumalanga there seem to be not budgeting adequately as compared to the Eastern Cape. Now, the practice that National Treasury is having a benchmark exercise. And in the country, well, in terms of provincial budget, we spend 70% or 72% of total provincial budget on education and health. Now, 40% will be education and around 80% is that. But it's a benchmark. No, it's a budget benchmark. Now, I can't say that these figures are adequate or Western Cape is over budgeting in the absence of nonsense standards. Because it makes it difficult to base these numbers, but they are descriptive and they are nominal. But we can do another analysis and say by how much is being adjusted for inflation. We don't know. So we don't have an accurate base to say, yes, Mpumalanga it is, but based on this analysis, we can say it's a financial benchmark. Well, there was an issue around health advertisation and delivery models. Now, my knowledge is that generally around infrastructure, provinces are struggling. to deliver on time. And one challenge is the alignment of budget and infrastructure delivery. We know that infrastructure takes a long time to deliver as compared to our budgets, which have a 12-year cycle, a 12-month cycle. No? So, yes, by the end of the financial year, we look at the figures and we find out that health revenue is about 84%. We say it was under expenditure because we close our books in end of March. But infrastructure, maybe we might deliver in August, the following financial year. How do we relate the two? You know? And provinces have worked with public works. Others, down public works, use other delivery agents, for instance, IT and so forth. But we don't see, you know, that delivery across provinces. And that's an area that we need to look into. One, the issue of systems, but also the challenges in the intergovernment fiscal relations. The issue around the non-financial data. This is because the Auditor General is now beginning to look at this, and it's important that departments have realistic timeline. But also, I think this will be a problem moving forward, because auditing also by itself is a 12-month cycle. But health programs, they go beyond 12 months. You know, how do you then say, for instance, HIV and the take? You know, we are taking a number of people because we are expanding the ARV program. We are saying we are targeting 300,000 people in this financial year. By the end, we are saying, no, only 250 people or 250,000 people. Are we going to say we have not reached the target or not? You know, because some people get into the system, others go out. How do you balance the financial requirement as well as the health requirement, taking what is happening realistically? So we need also to balance the two, and it's going to be a problem. But for tangible programs, it's easier to manage delivery. So if you are saying 5 or 3 at the beginning of the financial year, at the end of the financial year, we can assess whether we've delivered or what is the stage of delivery regarding those 5. So we need some flexibility in terms of tangible and some programs which are meant for social reforms or behavioral reforms. And lastly, it's around the issue regarding training grants. I think there the issue is around three things. It's around the design of the grant. It's around the transfer mechanism, and it's around the quantum of the money that is being allocated. If we are saying that as a country we are in shortage of medical personnel, is it the right way to fund the training of the medical personnel through grants or through the equitable share, and what will be the impact? And also in terms of the design of the grant, because currently we have hospitals, tertiary hospitals providing training for doctors. We also have universities providing training. So who must receive that? Do we transfer to universities? Do we transfer it to tertiary hospitals? What is the mechanism for accountability? Because provinces are required on a quarterly basis to submit Section 32 reports. But then if money is provided to universities, how are you going to make sure that they also comply if they are not compelled by the public finance management? So generally, those are the issues, you know, that I think as parliamentarians you need to discuss and agree on the appropriate mechanism.
Thank you very much. I'm hoping that you've completed
I would just like to understand your point of view.
making tertiary institutions, hospitals and things, even if they're in the province, to be under Michelin competence. Because to avoid the funding the province and funding the universities at different times, so that we know there is one pool that is going to for that particular service.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to know if FFC is able to give us a record of non-implemented recommendations.
Chair, just a quick one. So, just on the issue of the hospitals being centralised, I mean, have you given any thought to the opposite, decentralising, where hospitals are run like universities, independent, have their own budgets, and held accountable, the CEO is held accountable for the running of that hospital? Thanks.
Yeah, I think I must take it back to our recommendations. I think must have been 2006 or 2007 thereabouts. We actually did make some recommendations on what we think should happen in hospital, but that's purely from an administration point of view. Now, we will supply the recommendations, those implemented, those not, just so we can do that. Madam, I think the discussion now is really about shifting functions from one sphere to the other. That's what it involves. What I know now, currently, is that the Department of Cooperative Governance has resuscitated the white paper process that was started by the former Department of Provincial and Local Government that was actually reviewing the whole intergovernmental system. So in terms of our experiences, what do we think are the best approaches? So that process is actually only now being resuscitated, and I think those are the issues that will be addressed in that process. As a commission, we have no view, basically, about where what we have to do on is that we must actually be able to provide sufficient resources to enable these institutions to deliver the minimum levels of service, because that's what the Constitution requires us to do. So the decisions on where this function will sit or where that function sits is a political decision. We're just going to have to work through it, through the paper. It's now called the green paper, okay, so the green paper process, that's cooperative governance as well.
Okay,
thank you, Chairperson. I'm not sure if my question on PMS was answered in terms of the session order. PMS, the effectiveness and all that. Okay. And then maybe to add on that, I'm not sure, PDMS having a grant, what is the thing? I mean, your thought. I know that it might not be easy because we don't know how many people will get five, blah, 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 but what is your thought around that? And the issue of rural allowance as well, to say, is it working? You know, we come up with all the systems, but there's no monitoring and maybe evaluating whether it's working or not, what could be the issues, how do we, you know, get to the root and all that. Your thoughts on that. Okay, thank you.
The kinds of thoughts would basically be my own, but as a commission, you asked whether we can actually do some research around that. Now, if you as a committee would like us to do that research, you then send us a formal request to actually do that, and then we must look at it and say, in which dimension does it assist this particular committee? And then we can actually do that kind of thing. So I don't think that there's any problem with that. The issue of making a grant available, I think it's a bit complicated because those are really operational types of issues. So you would rather leave it within the budget, so, yeah, under the administration. And then, I think that's it.
we're not going to have that to go through until 2 o'clock. But thank you very much. In fact, as you were talking, all of you, Commissioner Kumar, Tebuko, and Imam Abban, I was thinking to myself, why don't we deploy you to some of these departments, specifically health, because we think that things will start moving. And what to do, you have a lot of positions, but we'll deploy you at the topmost position so that you could have your say. That's how you have been answering our questions and how you seem to know your way. Obviously, we might have overstepped our limits by asking you to do some of the things that you can do. But we apologize for that. It's because we feel very happy that there are people who understand what we are trying to do in South Africa. I know one of the things that probably you have mentioned is that in the infrastructure, there's a whole lot of problems that are there with public works and so on. But I think the department is on the right track because they started employing engineers. But we don't know whether they're going to be effective, knowing that some of that function is public works and public works has its own problem. But I think it's a way of them trying to get there. And the other part that you mentioned quite strongly is this long-term standard, which fortunately the development seems to be moving in that direction. I think ours is to make sure that we push them to quickly work on that. I don't have to mention this one, but I think trying to say to us, we must re-engineer even our thinking, not primarily okay, but our thinking as a whole. And in fact, I can't agree with you more. But you know, we've got this thinking that the hospital needs to be there. Yet, the hospital is not supposed to be there. It's there because people are sick. If we could make people not to be sick, then we don't need a hospital. And we've got this attitude that we should build more hospitals because we're anticipating that people must be sick. And we're not working the other way, saying that let's make people not to be sick so that we don't have hospitals. I think I agree with you, we need to re-engineer our thinking. I think some of us are quite happy that you say one of the causes of the department is the NHR. We're quite happy that you agree. And in fact, we understand it very well that NHI can never be an event. It has to be a process. As long as you are going to be helping us in shaping it so that it goes there, because this is very worrying that our health indicators are still so bad after 14 years down democracy or 17 years down democracy. We still have such bad indicators. And if you look at the budget that goes into health, it doesn't equate the health indices that we have. The health indices are very bad, yet the money that we're giving there, it's quite hectic. So we are very happy that you agree, and we just want to assist us in making sure as to how do we get there, so that we could have a health system for everybody that is going to improve the health condition. So thank you very much. We would reserve that to become our friend. So that whenever, in fact, we might be starting by asking you to do some reflections for us. So that you help us. And we need to meet time and again so that maybe we need to share your card so that we can know where to get you. And when you want certain things, we just contact you and say, is this happening? Members, I think we have come to an end. And we've even packed them, and I see that taking their things now ready to go. But I'm sure we'll have another time of meeting them. Thank you very much. And this is going to help us even with the prayers of what it's going to be very helpful for us. So, members, unless there's something there, but I think that we have summarized, I don't think there's anything to go by. So, let's allow them to take their luggage. And go.
Thank you very much.